Joe Escalante live from Hollywood. By Hollywood, I mean Burbank, across the street from a Wiener Schnitzel that serves beer. Today, we are coming to you from the Planet of the Tape studios in Seal Beach, where I cannot see the Wiener Schnitzel from my window, which I usually can, but I can see Catalina. We are talking about the business end of show business like we do every Sunday from 5 to 7 on KEIB 1150 on your AM dial. Right in the middle of March Madness, I'm rooting for UCLA because I went there, and so did my wife. And UCLA won both of their games this weekend, and they go to the Sweet 16. That's enough of sports. Let's get to we're going to stop. We're not going to start with the movies just yet because there's a breaking story right now about Grey's Anatomy and a writer on Grey's Anatomy called Elizabeth Finch. This could end up as one of those, it's from Shonda Rhimes, the TV show Grey's Anatomy, but it could end up as another TV series for Shonda Rhimes, whose latest series on Netflix, Inventing Anna, is all the rage. Everybody's talking about it, although I don't think it's that good. It's just so boring, this woman. And then I watched a real 2020 show about her, and she was boring in real life. And she wants to be rich, wants to pretend she's rich, so she lies about being rich. It's not any more entertaining than it on the fictional part of it than the real part of it. I mean, at least when Tiger King came out, I mean, it's Exotic Tigers, life and death, stakes are high, you might die. This is like, oh, someone might find out that I'm not rich. Someone might discover I'm poor, or I might end up poor. Like, you know what? You started out poor, poor in character. So there are no stakes. You started that way. And you had your poor character the whole entire time. You did nothing. You contributed nothing. And now we're doing a TV show about you. And sometimes that, elevates it to a certain art. But I don't think in this case. It's just the kind of writing that you are used to from Monday through Friday, primetime network series. It's network writing. The first time I heard what network writing was, I had written something and it was network writing. And the president of a studio read it and said, this is pretty good, but it's network writing. And then they explained to me what network writing was. And I go, you're absolutely right. I was writing that for a network. But it's not cool. And I was pitching to a company that was making stuff for Netflix. So they had their own standard, and this wasn't it. It's just a different kind of writing. Shonda Rhimes takes that kind of writing, network writing, and now she's delivering it to Netflix. And when you watch it, you go, wait, am I watching some, ABC or NBC drama? Because it sounds like it. The writing's like it. It doesn't sound authentic. It sounds like a put-on for broad-based people who watch commercials. And don't care. They just keep watching TV in prime time, and they don't record it. They just watch commercials, and they're not really. They like the stories. They want them to be wrapped up in an hour. They're not asking for anything more. I'm asking for something more, so I don't really respond too well to those shows. Inventing Anna is a version of those shows on Netflix, so it's a little off-putting to me. But people like it. Very popular. People are talking about it. Shonda Rhimes, her big hit Grey's Anatomy, has a problem, though, because one of the writers was on the show, I think basically because she had so much medical history and she would to draw from to write these stories. And in the writer's room, they're just saying, well, this happened to me, and then this happened to me, and this happened to me. And a lot of these stories that they were putting on the air were based on her medical history. Turns out now that medical history might have been faked. So she's barred from the writer's room until they figure it all out. She used to write all these essays, and they'd be on Shonda Rhimes' website about her medical history, whether it was her cancer, her rare case of bone marrow cancer or bone cancer that resulted in an amputation of some kind. I don't know how she faked that, but working from home works wonders when you're trying to fake an amputation, though, let me tell you. Even double amputations can be pulled off with the right Zoom framing. Now, she said she had lost a kidney. She had to abort a fetus because of chemotherapy. like really dramatic stuff. Then there was a Me Too portion of her career, and she's always got to write these and blog about these and go public, you know, for the greater good of humanity. And said she was harassed on Vampire Diaries, part of the Me Too women's empowerment movement. And now she's in trouble. One of the biggest shows in the history of television. Now, how did they find out about this? Well, that might be another scandal, because everything I told you this segment may also not be true, because this the story stems from a divorce. She married a woman, and she only been married to the woman for like a year and a half or something, and now they're getting a divorce, and so this stuff is being leaked by the disgruntled lover. And sometimes, wait, let me take that back. All the time, you got to take it with a grain of salt. So maybe none of that's true, too. But anyways, this is a story buzzing around Hollywood right now, and we're not going to say anything more about it until we find out if even it's remotely true. So now we can go to the box office, and the box office says Batman is the winner once again. It's like $300 million so far, but remember, Spider-Man, No Way Home, ended up with $800 million, or so far has $800 million. So it's got a ways to go to catch up with that. And the number two movie is called Jujutsu Kaisen. Oh, Kaisen Zero? The movie. That one is from a company called Funimation or Crunchyroll that distributes anime product. It did $17 million this weekend, and that's a big success for a cartoon with, you know, from Japan. Actually, it's a Korean director, it looks like. Number three is Uncharted. If you haven't seen that, that's worth seeing. And X from A24. A24, if you don't know, if you don't pay attention, A24 is the hottest indie movie distributor. And they get movies that are, you know, the cool kids want. Like, what do we got? Nomadland. Coda. Actually, Coda is from Amazon, so take that back. But those kind of movies, you know, they bid for those. And right now, their big one is X. The dog movie is number three. Dog. You know this movie. Channing Tatum and a dog. That one's still hanging in there at number five. And there you go. So not a lot of excitement. I haven't seen a movie in a while, because I've been out shooting. I shot six episodes of the new untitled Alien Abduction Project for Fox Nation, which will be airing in August, but we don't have a title for it yet. So that's, you know, it's hard when you don't have a title. But, so I haven't been able to see anything, and I had to prep for that, and now I have to prep for the recreations, the reenactments. And I got to write all the episodes. I think I'm only going to write five, though. I might hire a writer this time. I think I've got. It's hard to hire someone if it's almost like I can do these myself. It's only 22 minutes, but I'm working on that. And but I did see something, of course, on the plane. I saw American Underdog, the Kurt Warner story, the quarterback of the Rams when they were the St. Louis Rams, and I thought it was pretty good. It was directed by a couple of brothers. It looks like they do Christian films, maybe. But they did a great job with this, and it's a little Hallmarky at first, maybe, but then as they get into the football action, it gets better. And then when you see the insurmountable odds that this guy is overcoming to reach his pinnacle as the MVP of the Super Bowl, you are caught up in it, and it's very well done and very wholesome. Take the whole family. And now let's take a break and check the traffic and be back with more Joe Escalante live from Hollywood. I'm a lover of pizza all of the time. I'm a lover of Joe pizza. Escalante live from Hollywood. If by Hollywood you mean Burbank, the business end of show business. And a movie to watch for this week, I think it's coming out this week, but I'm not exactly sure, is a film called The Outfit. This is by a first-time director named Graham Moore, pretty English. If your name's Graham Moore, you're English anyways. I think this thing is an English film. But it's about an English tailor, Leonard, who used to craft suits on London's world-famous Savile Row. After a personal tragedy, he's ended up in Chicago operating a small tailor shop in a rough part of town, where he makes beautiful clothes for the only people around who can afford them, a family of vicious gangsters. So I think they got me on that, and it stars this guy, Sir David Mark Rylance. See, all kinds of English people in here. You might remember him from Don't Look Up, Dunkirk, Trial of Chicago 7, and other various period dramas. Anyway, good movies are coming out, so we'll go see them. And I'll probably go see, I hope I can, I don't know. I got to go back to this TV show. So it's be careful what you wish for. You want to be a showrunner? It's going to overwhelm you. But that's okay. I love it. Next Sunday, when we do our show, it'll be right in the middle of the Oscars. So, yeah, if you're driving around, this is something good to listen to. But if you're at home, you might want to watch the Oscars. Even though the cool thing to do is to tell people that you don't watch the Oscars anymore, and everybody's so woke and self-righteous that you can't stand it. Okay, we all know that, but we could watch it anyway. It's still one of these American traditions, like the Super Bowl, that everybody gathers around. They used to gather around, but you can still gather around because it's one of those things like, oh, I'm cutting my cable, that which a lot of people do, but it's nothing to be proud of, so keep it to yourself. I'm going to go over my best, couple of my best pictures or picks, because the last time I did this, you probably don't remember. But, I mean, it's been 2 weeks ago. I had seen all 10 of the nominees. You're welcome. And my feelings haven't changed that much about who will win. Obviously, the front runner now is Coda, because they won the Best Ensemble at the Screen Actors Guild Awards, and there's no more Golden Globes. The Golden Globes did happen, but they happened in an empty room at the Beverly Hilton Hotel, which I wish I could have been there. So no one cares. So now it's the Screen Actors Guild Awards, where people are looking, you know, what's the who's got the best chance, and that was Coda. Coda is a film about a child of deaf adults. This child kind of reminded me of Saoirse Ronan in Lady Bird, and she's just a girl that's got a heavy burden, and she's got to grow up despite all the people around her and their agendas on her life. It's just, you know, it's a girl story and a great one. Very well acted. And the sign language stuff is the best I've ever seen in a film. Marley Matlin's in it, of course. And you can't go wrong with this movie if it wins Best Picture. I certainly don't have a problem with that. I'm just going down the list here. Belfast, still possible. I don't think it's going to win. I just don't. A great movie. Great movie. Definitely in my top three. Don't Look Up, never going to win. It's an okay movie, shouldn't be on this list. Drive My Car, the best movie on this list. I've said it. The best picture of the year is Drive My Car, the Japanese movie about two people who you know, learn a lot about each other and about themselves while being stuck in a car together. Dune. No Dune. I don't even think Dune should have been made. Just leave David Lynch's one out there. It's not perfect, but we don't need two of them. You know, if you want more, if you think Dune by David Lynch is not perfect, then go read the book again. King Richard, that's a great movie. Some great performances. It's not Best Picture of the year. Licorice Pizza, my second favorite movie of the year, and could win. Be a surprise. Be a big shocking upset. But it's in the hunt. Nightmare Alley, that's a good movie. One of Guillermo del Toro's best, but not going to win. The Power of the Dog, either the best movie of the year or the worst movie of the year, depending on who you ask. If you ask me and Sam Elliott, it's the worst movie of the year. It won all. It has the most nominations. So theoretically, you say, "Well, it's obviously going to win. It's a well-rounded movie with all the best nominations." But to me, the acting is fantastic in this movie. So all the acting nominations are warranted, and maybe the other ones too. But Best Picture, not. West Side Story. West Side Story, I still believe, will win Best Picture. Why? Because of the weighted voting. No one can agree on what is the best picture, so you have to list your first, second, third, fourth, fifth down on the line. So who's everybody's first choice? If everybody's first choice was the same, then that company, that picture would win. Well, how many people are going to – is everyone going to rally around The Power of the Dog? Especially recently, Jane Campion had some weird comments. So she's had a gaffe, all right? So that movie is harmed by the gaffe. So some people are going to go, gaffe brings it down a little bit. But there's also a lot of people that are going to recognize what a horrible film it is to watch, to sit through. It's just a horrible thing to sit through. So a lot of people are going to vote for it last. Many people will vote for it first. Coda, many people will vote for that first. But I think those people will be split among the Codas and the Licorice Pizza and the Drive My Cars. They just kind of split the vote here. Everybody's second choice is going to be West Side Story. So when you add them all up at the end, when 100% of the people vote for West Side Story, it's the winner. Okay. That's my theory. Best actor, we already know Will Smith will win that. Supporting role, Troy Kotsur from Coda will win that, run away with it. Benedict Cumberbatch in The Power of the Dog will not win Best Actor, because that's Will Smith. Sorry, shouldn't even gone back there. Jessica Chastain, I didn't think she had a chance. Now I think she'll win Best Actress. I didn't know she was nominated a bunch of times before, so now I know. Yeah, she'll probably win Best Actress in a Supporting Role. Now it starts to get interesting. I think the favorite, Ariana DeBose in West Side Story. But they're all good. All of these are good. Kirsten Dunst in Power of the Dog, fantastic. Maybe she wins. The King Richard lady, she's good. Judi Dench in Belfast, she's good. And a icon, so, you know, you want her up there classing up the joint. Jesse Buckley in Lost Daughter was fantastic. Did you see The Lost Daughter? You should. It's good. And Olivia Colman, also in The Lost Daughter, nominated. But I don't think she'll beat Jessica Chastain. Jessica Chastain is the new Olivia Colman, maybe. We've seen Olivia Colman get up there and grab all her awards. She's great, though. But this award was, this role was a little bit sleepy. So I don't think she's going to get it. Now, let's go to documentary feature. I think it goes to Attica. If you haven't seen Attica, it's on one of the streaming channels. I think it's a lock. Summer of Soul could win, but I think Attica is a lock. Best foreign film, Drive My Car will be, and all the other ones, I think, are two. Insider Baseball, you don't want to know. We don't want to talk about it. So I'll just leave it there. West Side Story, still the best picture of the year at the Oscars. What was the gaffe that Jane Campion made this week? Well, she was accepting an award from the People's Choice Awards, and in her acceptance speech, I guess she said, some dig at Venus and Serena Williams by saying they do not play against the guys like I have to, which led Bill Burr's famous 2020 Saturday Night Live joke. I guess it's a joke, or it's an admonishment to white women, to resurface, and it's gone viral again. And he says, "I've got to tell you the way white women somehow hijacked the woke movement. Generals around the world should be analyzing this. The woke movement was supposed to be about people of color not getting opportunities, finally making that happen. And it was about that for about 8 seconds. Then somehow white women swung their Gucci-booted feet over the fence of oppression and stuck themselves at the front of the line." Okay, that's Bill Burr. That's not me, but it's going around. Let's take a break. Joe Escalante, live from Hollywood.
Naughty!
Joe Escalante live from Hollywood, if I Hollywood me. Business End of Show Business every Sunday, KEIB, AM 1150. Now, the biggest story, I would say, that is floating around, which I don't know why it's so big, but a lot of it doesn't make any sense, but it is something. Bob Chapek, the president of Disney, the head of the CEO of the Walt Disney Corporation, the guy who took over from Bob Iger. Sometimes they call this guy Bob Second, Bob the Second. So Bob the Second, or Bob II, he had a problem when he took over, and he told Scarlett Johansson, you're not going to get profits when our movies are on Disney Plus. We're not going to pay you box office profits. And she said, wait, what the heck? What are you talking about? And it kind of made sense from a business affairs point. It's like, look, we're in a pandemic. Things are crazy. Everyone's got to sacrifice. The whole world is sacrificing, so you're going to sacrifice too. And she was like, wait a second. Where's the sacrifice on the other end? You're putting this movie on Disney Plus, and your subscriber numbers are skyrocketing, and now your bonuses are skyrocketing, and I'm sitting here like a sap. No thank you. So he lost that battle and had to pay profits. And he said some mean things about her and her motivations, or his lawyers did. So that didn't go well for him. Now we have the issue of the law in Florida. There's a law in Florida that says the governor is there is going to sign that says in schools you can't teach very young children. I think it's like kindergarten, first, second, third. Whatever. You can't teach them about gender identity and that kind of stuff. Sexual preferences and stuff like that. You know what I'm talking about. The kind of stuff that some people in the country say, yeah, well, you should definitely teach kids about that because, you know, it's a part of life. And they need to learn about this stuff. And, you know, rather than beating on their gay classmates, they should learn about, you know, why they're gay and that's okay, and you can't beat them up. And that's on the one side. On the other side, our parents saying, I don't want my kid being taught that by a teacher. I will teach my kid that stuff. I want my teacher to teach them to read and write and do arithmetic. And that is the battle. In Florida, the battle is winning. The battle is being won at this time, but things change, by the parents that are saying, look, I will talk to them about that, and you will talk to them about reading, writing, and math. And so that's in Florida, and I think it's in a lot of other states now because that's the way parents feel. But on the other end, the people in the LGBTQ community have saying that is not just a parental choice. That is a dangerous setup that could lead to more discrimination against people that are not the normal, or well, I can't say normal. I know that. Whatever they are, you know what I'm talking about, and I'm sick of talking about it. But parents versus activists. And the activists say to Bob Chapek, you cannot move the Imagineering Department to Florida because Florida cannot, we cannot reward Florida with all these jobs and income because they have voted for this. So they are therefore evil people. I think that's what they're saying. They're backwards, and so we can't. We got to punish them somehow, and the punishing them would be don't move all the engineers over there. Well, the truth is the engineers don't want to go there because they don't want to live in Florida, or they want a choice, and they don't want to be fired if they don't go over there. And I just got back from Florida, and there are a lot of bugs, and the weather's funny, you know? It's really good in the winter, and then you get there in the summer, and, you know, it's a struggle, and the weather in Burbank is much more delightful. So I get it, and if you think these people are monsters for voting for this, then, yeah, you don't want to live there. I think if you start ascribing monsterhood to everybody that wants to raise their kid differently, or everybody that has a different political view than you, you are, it's no way to go through life. So they're going through their life where now they can't keep their jobs because somebody has a different way they want to raise their kids. So even if that way is wrong or slightly wrong or even a lot wrong, it's a tough thing to hang your hat on. But to them, it's a civil rights issue. And now if it is a civil rights issue, is it not a civil rights issue to be able to have your kid learn stuff that you wanted to learn and then you don't want it to learn others? I don't know. Did you have to force that on them? I don't know, because I don't have kids. I don't have to face this. But this seems like it should be a political battle where you go there and you vote to have it overturned, and then you go to the people in the state and you say, hey, look, I know what you're saying, and you want to – let's make a compromise here. Let's have a committee approve stuff. We're going to teach these kids just enough about gender so that they understand people who have gender issues that are different than your kids, or so you think. And then we can find a way to teach them to help kids that are struggling with this stuff, and so there's no homophobia or transphobia, but not indoctrinate children into one side or the other against their parents' will. Maybe you have a permission slip. Hey, we're going to, like, that's the way it was when I went to school. Hey, we're going to talk about sex. You got to have this permission slip signed. And there's a few people that are just going to be in the library that day, and they're not going to be watching the film strip. So it doesn't seem like there's any compromises going on like that. So Bob Chapek is, he's got a big problem on his hands. The problem is, too, that he came out and said, hey, we're not going to get involved in that. And then they said, how dare you? Then he came out and said, I'm very, very sorry. I let you down. And now he's got to deal with it. And if he, I don't think there's any real great way for him to win this. And if he's constantly embroiled in these fights, maybe the CEO of Disney gets fired. That is a rough price to pay for what he's trying to do, which is run a company and save money on taxes. So he's funneling people to a red state where the taxes will be low and the labor issues are less complicated for him. And it's right where Disney World is. And by the way, a good part of America is also moving down there to take advantage of these things. But on the other hand, Disney is just a woke company. The creatives at Disney, so many of them are gay that it's, and then the coworkers work with these people. They love each other, their family, everybody. So they're like a political block. They're advocates, they're activists, and these are the guys that make your cartoons. So you have to understand that without these people, your cartoons are going to suck, because this is where the talent is. All right, I'm going to take a break here, and we come back. More of this on Joe Escalante Live from Hollywood.
Joe Escalante is my lawyer. You don't want money.
Joe Escalante Live from Hollywood. If by Hollywood you mean Burbank, with the business end of show business, here every Sunday on KEIB AM 1150 in Los Angeles. For you people driving around, the podcasts are readily available every Sunday night. They put them up. Sometimes they put too many of them up. Sorry about that. Okay. Remember the Johnny Depp Amber Heard lawsuit, where Johnny Depp sued the newspapers for defamation, saying that he was a wife beater, and he went there and he couldn't beat it. He did not win, and he appealed. He did not win that either. So he still has a lawsuit here you may not know about, but it's about to go to trial. This is a direct lawsuit filed against Amber Heard, the Aquaman actress, and she is going to defend. And she has a $100 million countersuit, by the way, this defamation charge against her. And that's, I think, the first thing we have in these trials is a motion for summary judgment to throw it out. Now, Amber Heard will try to throw it out. Say, even if everything he says in this thing is true, it's still not a lawsuit. So that's going to happen on March 24th. And if he survives that, then we have a trial that will feature such witnesses as James Franco, Paul Bettany, Elon Musk, some Disney executives, Warner Brothers executives, Ellen Barkin, Jason Momoa, Brian Lord, the head of CAA. All these people are going to be hauled into court, or at least have to testify, you know, in on video or something. And the trial should last about 2 weeks. And if Johnny loses this one, you know, he's got a bad a case of bad status in society, in the industry. But if he wins, maybe this can relaunch his career. Because remember, he was thrown out of the whole Pirates of the Caribbean movie thing, thrown out of Fantastic Beasts because of her running around saying that he is a wife beater. If he's not a wife beater, that is something that qualifies as defamation, something that makes you spit on the ground. You, sir, are a wife beater. Oh, that's disgusting, wife beater. If it's true, okay. If it's not true, then that's defamation. Now, because he's a public figure, you have to show malice. I don't think it'll be that hard to show malice because here we have a woman who knows that if she calls him a wife beater, it will harm his career. And but he has to establish it that she's doing it to harm his career. She has a reason for doing it, and it's a malicious reason. That's where the malice comes in. So we'll follow that and report back to you, the listener. Here's a story where you can find on my Facebook page, Joe Escalante Live from Hollywood, on the Facebook. It's going on in Russia right now. Okay, what's going on in Russia? Well, a lot of our companies, American companies, are pulling out and they're leaving. Take, for instance, McDonald's. McDonald's is pulling out of Russia, so there's going to be no more McDonald's. And so what does Russia do? This is offensive to me as a champion of intellectual property rights. They said, fine, you go. We're going to open up a restaurant called Uncle Vanya, and it's going to have the same logo, okay? And then they made an announcement to everybody in Russia, you can apply for a trademark on something that's not yours and belongs to some company if the company is headquartered in an unfriendly country. So I guess everybody but China. Now, so you can just have any trademark you want in China right now. You can see this article on my Facebook page. What they've done with the Golden Arches, it looks like they made them sideways maybe, but they're the Golden Arches, and it's called Uncle Vanya. Now, Uncle Vanya, I was like, wait, where did I know that word? Yeah, it's a play by Anton Chekhov. But it's not like a fun play about Happy Meals. No, it's a play about the despair of a joyless life, really. And it was the centerpiece of the Oscar-nominated Drive My Car. So if you see Drive My Car, you're going to watch the play within the movie, Uncle Vanya, being performed by people in like 9 different languages all at once. So everybody speaks their own language to each other, and it goes on the screen above, like they have a screen that translates everything that's being said. So you can actually follow along and everybody speaks their own language, including one character that speaks sign language. So why is this happening and why would they put an audience through this? Well, that's part of the genius of Drive My Car. They don't explain it really and they don't apologize for it. But while you're watching it, you can realize it contributes to the intensity of the lead character that he would spend so much of his time mounting this production. So anyway, yeah, there's a little Oscar tie-in to this Russian story. What else is interesting about this Russian story is the, you know, other trademarks that are leaving, I think, you know, it's the usual, you might think like Starbucks. So then that'll just mean another Starbucks will come in and make coffee and use the Starbucks logo. This is more abuse by the Russian government of their people, because if you've listened to the show for even just a little bit, you know that trademarks are designed to protect the public, not protect the trademark owner so much. The copyright is designed to protect the copyright owner. But the beauty of a trademark is it protects the public, me and you, so that we know the origin of the goods that we're buying, and they come from a certain place, and there's no confusion. So that when you go to Disneyland, you know that their safety is top shelf. And if you went to a place called Disneyland, but it was in Pascagoula, Mississippi, you say, well, it says Disneyland on it. I don't know. These rides seem kind of ratchet. Yeah, but it says Disneyland. It must be good. That's where trademark laws come in to protect the consumer. It's called a false designation of origin. So Russia is going to be a false designation nation, really, because they're going to let anybody apply for these trademarks and do whatever they want to their people. Another reason not to live in Russia. So however, there's some trademarks and some companies, Western companies, cannot leave. A good example is Burger King. Burger King says they can't leave because they have these deals and these contracts that would screw up a bunch of other things, so they just can't leave. So they're gonna have to ride it out. So let's not judge Burger King. There's not much they can do. If you're like me, you don't eat at Burger King. But I did have their Impossible Burger the other day, and it was quite good. Not a lot of choices on the Indian reservation in Arizona than the Navajo Nation. And one thing I'll say about my trip, recent trip across the country, is, as you can expect, masks are almost nowhere. They're on the planes, more on the way out on American Airlines. There were little sticklers about masks on the way back. They're not sticklers anymore, and I guess someday you won't wear a mask on a plane. But the airports were not sticklers. But the place where there's the most stickler of all stickling is the Navajo Nation. Well, you get out of your car and you go into a Navajo Nation store or restaurant. There's a guy there in a card table saying, you put your mask on, and if you don't have one, I'm going to give you one right now. And that's his only job. He's at a card table, a little station. Then you put on the mask. He goes, and by the way, you have to wash your hands in this hand sanitizer thing here. So you also must wash your hands to get in the store. You take two steps, and if your mask isn't on already, some other guy over in the turquoise section, which is the largest section in the store probably, just kidding, he tells you, hey, put your mask on, and you haven't got it on yet. They have a guy sitting by the bathrooms to make sure there's not too many bathrooms being used, like the enforcing social distancing over in the bathrooms. That's just in one store. And then every employee is a mask policeman. And that's Navajo Nation. And I think the country has convinced the Navajos that they are extremely vulnerable to infection, and they have bought into it. And they, I don't know, I just, you know, it was a little sad. So pray for the Navajo Nation that they can, you know, live their lives again as soon as possible. All right. Okay. Well, okay, so next week's the Oscars, and we'll see if my prediction that the West Side Story is the winner comes true. And as you can tell, I'm all in. I'm not hedging anything. If I'm wrong, you know, I'm wrong about 99% of things, so it's okay. But I am right about this. I'm leaving you now with just a taste of the greatest song ever written. Eso! ¡Qué bárbaro! ¡Qué bárbaro!